Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Locked On Seminoles, your favorite daily Florida State sports talk show with your favorite daily Florida State talk people. Today, we're going to talk about the boys on the diamond just a little bit, but don't worry, we are going to do what y'all want us to do and talk about plenty of Florida State football after. Is former tight end coach Tim Brewster the answer to our recruiting woes after we were left by Kenyatta Watson for arguably not as green of pastures? And what should we expect from the special teams this year? All that and more. We got a great show for you today. Drizzy, roll the video and let's get into it.
You are Locked On Seminoles, your daily podcast on the Florida State Seminoles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Folks, welcome back to Locked On Seminoles. We are excited to have you here. As we always say, make sure you subscribe, make sure you like the video, and make sure you leave your questions down below. Unfortunately, we didn't do a Mailbag Monday this week, as y'all are probably aware of. I apologize for that. I'd also like to apologize to Truist Park, all the bars around the Atlanta Braves Stadium, and absolutely nobody else. Just kidding. But it was a tough Sunday, so no mandatory Mailbag Monday this time, folks. And
I do love how baseball is literally the reason why both of us were unavailable yesterday to record Mailbag Monday.
Yeah, I mean, dude, it was a good series. We were playing the Padres. Like, I went to the game Saturday. It was a blast. And I was like, well, let's wrap it up with a Sunday game, you know? And then, okay, well, sometimes, you know what, guys, real sports take priority. It's the off season, but we appreciate you rocking and rolling with us. And speaking of baseball, don't worry, we're not gonna go way down the baseball rabbit hole, but I would like to give a shout out to our men's baseball team, 2-1 against the Miami Hurricanes this weekend. If you don't follow college men's baseball, you're a normal person. That's cool. But they have a thing called RPI, which is it's the metric that they will use to help decide the tournament and all this stuff. And there's computers involved. I don't know. Miami was number 6, so to go 2-1 against them and win a series was really solid. We also get another crack at Florida, I believe Thursday.
I think Thursday.
Yep. So all you need to know about this baseball team, if your boss is like a big Florida State baseball fan, and he's like, hey, you've been following the team, here's all you got to say. Oh, yeah, I mean, this is the type of team that can lose to Stetson and can go out there and sweep TCU and beat Miami in a series. You know, you just never know with these guys. And honestly, that's like really all there is to say about this baseball team. They are all over the place. And this team, no joke, if Vanderbilt and Tennessee didn't exist, could win a World Series this year. Or they could not even make a regional. Like, it's the most bizarre baseball team I've ever watched. And anyway, that's kind of all I have about baseball.
Yeah, basically our pitchers can shove, and our hitters, when they run a rake, they can definitely rake with both Jamie Ferrer and also Alex Hurrall. You know, overall, and like being 2-1, especially against Carson Palmquist, where we lost that game, he's going to be a top 10 pick next year in the lottery. He's a converted closer to starting pitcher, and that kid's gross. So it's honestly, all in all, it's a really great win, and hopefully we can continue some momentum against Florida and against UNC this coming week.
Yeah, and then we'll have the ACC tournament, and the ACC is tough this year. Yeah, anyway, and again, that TCU series, we had TCU on the ropes, lightning delay caused them to cancel game 3, but this team also lost to Stetson. So it's, you know, we'll see. The interesting thing is going to be, have you seen who's like number 4, number 3 in the RPI?
No, because like baseball rankings are so weird for college baseball. It's like, yeah, they're literally all over the place.
It can just be my thing. Dallas Baptist University is like a top 5 team this year. I don't know where they came from. I mean, Dallas. But it's like, they're not even the most well-known Christian school in their greater metropolitan area.
Is Abilene Christian?
No, that's in Abilene. SMU's in Dallas.
Oh, I know that, actually.
Yeah. Anyway, but whatever. We've talked enough about baseball. Let's talk about Florida State football, why the people are here. Folks, we have two big pieces of news today, and they're based around listener questions. Number one, we've been getting a lot of questions about Winston Wright. As you may or may not know, it's your first time here, no worries. Winston Wright was a transfer receiver from West Virginia University. Basically, West Virginia's only good receiver. He's also our only transfer receiver that was really proven. Now, we've actually seen some pretty good things from these transfers, but on the stat sheet, he's the only one that had, I think he had 550 receiving yards last year. Also a really good punt returner, so we were excited about that. He's here for like a week or two, gets in a car crash where he is not driving, and the driver of his vehicle is not at fault. Literally just an unlucky act of God, and you feel horrible for the kid, first of all. Secondly, it's like, dude, I mean, can you, like, just how unlucky can you be? Like, you're in your friend's car, you get smashed into by another car, and you might lose your football season, or worse, because we heard he had a broken leg. And, well, Drake, I think you were kind of the one that reported it. We've heard some encouraging things.
It's a little more encouraging things. It's apparently the broken leg is it's a little bit lower down the leg. It's probably something more towards the ankle area where that actually is broken. I can't confirm that right now until, like, you know, that's a thing where, like, we won't be able to hear that until probably fall camp. But my concern was hearing from people actually at the school. I think you were the same thing, where neither of us are doctors. I have a doctorate in law, but trust me, I was horrible at the game operations as a kid. So you don't want me doing any of that stuff. But from what I was hearing over there, it seems very optimistic that he's out there, you know, running routes, actually being with his team, at the very least actually conditioning and running, which is what you want to see. And I was hopeful that he would probably be back maybe the last week of October, maybe the first week of November. He might actually be ready in time for fall camp and actually be prepared for the Duquesne game. Now, my personal opinion, I would keep him out of Duquesne because it's David Duquesne. We don't need to actually, you know, risk him getting hurt there. But to me, Winston Wright Jr. will, like, easily lifts the floor and the ceiling for his entire roster position group, because, like, as you said, 63 catches, 688 yards, 5 TDs. He's a menace at the kickoff return. And that was all with a very, very bad QB at WVU. So this is actually a huge, huge injection for our entire program. And that this honestly might swing the win total, probably maybe even up one.
Yeah. So two things. I talked to my buddy who's a doctor, and we were talking about the leg, and not to sound pedantic, but he was like, yeah, I mean, the leg is a very long bone. There's a lot of stuff around your leg. You have first of all, you have an upper and a lower leg, which matters where that is, right? Because your lower leg, you've got a big muscle in the back called the calf, right? That's what you use for running, for jumping, for pushing off, for cutting. Upper leg, you've got your quad, one of the most complex muscles in the body. Behind that, you've got your hamstring, you know, and you've got your what's it called? The, I almost said the QR code, but whatever that band is, the LT band that runs down the side and has all that different fascia. Anyway, it's a complicated thing. So the point I'm making, that he was making to me, is where the leg breaks matters a lot. It also matters a lot what the broken leg takes with it, because there are leg breaks where, and it sounds like Winston Wright's probably more in this camp, you can break your leg clean through in a part of the leg that really isn't all that important for walking stability, like stability of movement, and it can hit no muscles, no arteries, no tendons, or you can break through a part of your leg that is incredibly important to movement stability and dislocate a knee, dislocate an ankle, dislocate a hip, rip two or three ligaments out when you do it, tangle up some veins like Mackenzie Milton did. I mean, a broken leg, and this is why I think on this program, you know, we get kind of painted as the pessimists sometimes, but we also try to avoid hype trains until it's like we can justify it or it's warranted. So when people said, we're optimistic, he could come back, yeah, because it could be a good break, it could be a bad break, but they weren't releasing x-rays. Like, no one knew. No one still knows.
I mean, no, it's good. And that's something that, you know, we usually on here kind of want to wait, especially when it comes to injuries, because one, we don't typically know. But then when you hear from multiple sources, when you hear from multiple people, when you ask around, it's like, okay, I can sort of start feeling a little bit better. I'm still probably in the camp that I think we won't see him until maybe the LSU game, maybe even the game after that, because it's a leg injury, and I've seen what a leg injury does, you know, actually to, like, my brother towards ACL, so how that turned out. We've seen basically, like you alluded to before, the severity of the Mackenzie Milton leg break, which is extremely similar to the Alex Smith break that we saw actually in the NFL. But this is something that, from hearing all everything, it's in the category of, like you were saying, it's a very, very lower break. It's hopefully, it's typically the may probably around the ankle area, like I said before. And if he's out there, you know, just running routes and actually being with his teammates and practicing, it's something that definitely we need, because he needs to develop their rapport with whoever's a QB, with Jordan Travis too, especially because he's something that Micah Pittman is a really, really good wideout, I believe. But I think when you ask him to be your number one option, I think you're asking a lot of a kid who might not be able to achieve that. And I think him being the number two with Winston Wright actually being your number one threat changes the offense drastically and also probably makes Jordan Travis's job a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And just to give you, if you Google how long does it take a broken leg to heal, anywhere from 6 to 60 weeks is the prognosis, depending on how it's broken and what other damage is done. I don't even know, for me, I'm not going to try to, because of what I just said, I'm not going to try to speculate on when he'll come back or when he won't. It's just encouraging that, A, for him, it wasn't a career-ending thing, because that would suck. I wouldn't wish that on anyone. To be literally doing nothing at fall and just boom, career over. At least when you get hurt playing football, you were assuming the risk of playing football. He was riding in a car. But anyway, for everything you said, it's good that we'll have ideally a receiving threat. But look, it wasn't all that long ago. What's his name for Alabama? Judy was, he was kind of a decoy in that game,
but Waddle. Waddle.
I'm sorry, you're right. Jalen Waddle. Jalen Waddle came back and played in that national championship game for the Tide. And he had a broken leg, right? Or a broken ankle, something like that.
I think it was an ankle.
Either way, people can come back from these things. Modern medicine's great. Anyway, I do want to get to a few other things because we've had a few more questions come in. And I think that we should talk about Tim Brewster possibly joining the staff. I would also like to... I'd like to discuss the special teams because we got a question about that from one of our listeners. Was it Seth Carpenter? That's right. I remembered it in my brain. So let's get to that. But first, folks, I gotta tell you about Built Bar because y'all know. Look, when you're hungry, you're not gonna have a great day. When you're tired, you're not gonna have a great day. And when you're hungry and tired, it's just gonna be a miserable day. Now look. Built Bar can't make you get enough sleep at night. Sorry. I wish I could tell you it would. You could take Built Bar and a melatonin, whatever. But I can't tell you it'll help you sleep. But I can tell you it'll make you full. It'll give you energy during the day. That way you can use some of that energy and maybe get some sleep that night. I don't know. Look, folks, I'm not a scientist here. But what I do know is I like Built Bar. It's got 17 grams of protein. It's got 5 grams of carbs, 5 grams of net sugar. But it doesn't taste like it's only got 5 grams of sugar. It's the taste of a candy bar. It hits like a protein bar. And that is enough for me. And therefore, it should be enough for you. So if you're interested in looking great, feeling great, and having a bar that tastes great, go to Built.com. Use promo code LOCKED15. It's Built.com. Promo code LOCKED15.
And get the puffs. Birthday cake puffs are actually really, really freaking good.
All right, man. So today in Twitterdom, I love Twitter. I hope one day I have the gravitas to tweet out some cryptic stuff and make everyone go nuts. But Tim Brewster, former tight ends coach under Jimbo. And did he stay the first year under Taggart or did he leave with Jimbo? He left with Jimbo, right?
He left with Jimbo, pretty sure.
Left when Jimbo left. But he was here from 2013 till 2017 because there was that weird stint. Who did we have? Someone was here for 5 minutes as our tight end coach and then left. And then
I'm pretty sure actually it was Billy Napier.
It was. Was it Billy? Yeah, it was someone like that. Someone well known. I want to say it was Napier.
Is it Billy Napier or Bill Clark, the UAB head coach right now?
No. Then it was definitely Billy Napier because it was someone who's kind of in the Florida sphere still.
It was Napier. He went immediately to Alabama.
Yeah. So he left. I don't even know if he was in preseason camp, whatever. Brewster takes over. Today, Tim Brewster, again, former tight end coach, who has now, by the way, been coaching at Florida. Dan Mullen got fired. Brewster's no longer there. Tweeted something about coaching at a lot of schools, and his favorite tradition is, and then insert GIF here, boom, spear plant at midfield. Oh, boy, did that set Twitter ablaze. Tell you what, Florida State Twitter. I bring the passion to my daily life that Florida State Twitter brings to just about anything because y'all are a trip. Y'all are something else. But Drake, what do you make about this? What are you hearing on the street? What do you What do you think is going to come of Tim Brewster? What would he do on the on this coaching staff? What, give me the rundown.
So Tim Brewster, as Max alluded to, was here under Jimbo from 2010 to 2017. And also he was, I think, one of the only two coaches that Jimbo brought with him to Texas A&M. And Tim Brewster actually did coach tight ends and also did help finalize that first recruiting class before he was posted over to Mac Brown's side of the thing, where he was not only the assistant head coach, but also the recruiting coordinator. And I'm pretty sure he was kind of instrumental in helping Sam Howell actually head over there at the final buzzer. But Tim Brewster, that's someone that I think would be hired in an off-field role. He wouldn't be coming in on-field staff because, I mean, quite frankly, we already have a tight ends coach, even though I'm pretty sure Chris Thompson, I really don't know exactly what he does here. But with Tim Brewster, I think he would fill the role that was vacated by Kenyatta Watson, who left for actually the, I think the director of recruiting actually over at Georgia Tech. Because I'm pretty sure his son is actually also there, and that's something that you really, you can offer a guy a lot of money, but then when you give him opportunity to be working in the same field with his son together, it's kind of difficult, especially when it's the, in an area that both you and your son kind of cultivated a life together there. So to me, with Tim Brewster being hired out the field, this is someone that actually, he's a very, very aggressive recruiter. That's a kind of a nice way to put it. And he's someone that was instrumental in landing a Dalvin Cook, a Marvin Wilson, even though he didn't pan out here, a Malik Henry too. You can even look at Amir Rasul. Like down the line, there's a lot of great players that he actually was able to bring to Florida State. And we have had a closing problem. We've had a closing problem with everyone on the staff except for maybe Atkins, Woodson, and maybe John Pucci, the defensive ends coach. So overall, this is someone that hopefully can actually be able to close, because that's an issue that has plagued the staff for the past three seasons.
God awful head coach, though. Tell you what.
I don't think he brings that. Minnesota. I don't think he brings that. I think he's one of the people that is literally you hire him strictly for recruiting purposes. He's like, you just have someone else coach it. Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting because I always wonder, you know, here on your favorite sports talk radio with your favorite sports talkers, and these are the musings of Max Moody. It's such a bizarre field to be in. Like, I just can't imagine being 61 and being like, you know what? I'm going to go work for a dude 20 years younger than me in a position that, like, I held 30 years ago. Just going to have to admit I'm only good at, like, one aspect of this job and, you know, do my thing. I don't know. It's like, it's kind of how I feel about Randy Shannon, where it's like, I know it's in there. I try to humanize these people in my mind. And I think that we're so quick not to, not you specifically, but just us as fans, as media, we're so quick to act like they're robots. And I mean, I look at this resume, right? And it's like he coached in the NFL for Denver for a year. And then he was with Minnesota as a head coach for 4 years and was just awful. And then he goes to Mississippi State as a wide receivers coach. And then he's here under Jimbo. And he wins, you know, a championship, a whole bunch of games, leaves in 17 for A&M, goes to North Carolina, and he's the assistant head coach, tight ends, you know, running game coordinator, recruiting coordinator, whatever RC is, probably recruiting coordinator. And then he goes to Florida, and it's like, this guy hasn't been able to hold down a job for more than a year, 61 years old. Like, I'm not saying he can't be great. I'm not saying we don't need people. It's just, when you start to look at it like that, I don't know if we're going to get the same Tim Brewster we got in 2013 when he would have been like 51 working for Jimbo, who was like close to his age, who, you know, people knew was like 2013, you kind of knew that was the year to win the championship and he was ready to build it. And now it's like, he's going to come here and work for a guy 20 years younger than him. Like, he could have a kid Mike Norvell's age basically. And is he really going to be that excited? Is he going to get that fired up for $100,000 a year as an off-field analyst?
I think he can get paid probably a little more than that. I wouldn't be surprised.
I think it's around 250 or so.
I would say maybe give him 300-350K. And I think mainly you stick him in the director recruiting spot. Well, it's mainly because you probably have money left over from the wide receivers coach that you tried to hire. And then you probably like, hey, listen, like Brewster, I mean, that's a valid point where you do get worried that he is so far removed from like his recruiting heyday. But if you put him in the spot with, and that old Kenyatta Watson spot, you know, he'd be working with a Corey Fuller, with a K'Juan Ratliff too. Like those people are two new hires that actually have been helpful a lot with having inroads with, you know, South Florida recruiting. Like this is someone that actually probably has probably stronger ties with that area. And as of right now, we've been hearing and talking about how there is not a single wide receiver right now that we're actually in deep with in South Florida. And this is probably one of the deeper years for that position group actually in a very long time within the state. And you need someone like at least a temp with this. So it's more like, I get what you're saying, and it is a very, very valid concern that maybe the game is just too old for him, has passed him by because he is, you know, up there in years. But I think this is something at least you take a shot on someone that, because if he's only doing recruiting, we already know he's very, very, very good at that. If you just stick him in the recruiting spot, and that's all he has to handle.
Yeah, I mean, but again, so I don't think the game's passing by. I think look at Nick Saban. Nick Saban's 71 years old, and the game's probably never going to pass him by. I mean, he understands how to adapt. I think I'm more questioning, like, and this is as a young person who is on an upward trajectory in my career, like still building that and still hungry and wanting to do all these things. But I wonder, are you getting the same guy that was on the way up, you know, who was recruiting like crazy? Because that's how you build your reputation. That's what, you know, his hunger to get Dalvin was to make a name for himself, to eventually go do bigger things. And now it's like, you just can't deny. I mean, I don't want to like type in everyone's ear, but we could probably look it up real quick. Like, what does our tight ends coach make versus Kenyatta Watson? Because I know Kenyatta, I don't know off the top of my head. I'm 80% sure the number I have in my head is around $175, and I think they were willing to take him a little over $200, which in Tallahassee is good money. Don't get me wrong, but like, it's not, you know, my point is he didn't go to bed at night like in 2013, 2014 after he had a ring on his finger thinking like, man, I can't wait for this to all kind of fall apart and me to come back and work a front office role for a guy that, you know, I could be his dad. And part of recruiting is energy and persistence. And I wonder, like, is he going to bring that? A. B. Who does he know? Because the other thing with Kenyatta Watson, who, by the way, like, sorry, I'm just being real, by all accounts, wasn't amazing at his job. Like, they weren't super broken up to see Kenyatta go. They weren't happy, but they weren't like, it wasn't like he was knocking down five stars up in the Atlanta area, but his son went to high school in the Atlanta area, and he had the connections from starting that middle school, whatever he started, like that middle school player showcase. Like,
he also was instrumental in doing Under Armour from not only from, I guess, the Under Armour All-American game, but also Under Armour Under 14.
That's what I'm talking about. He started that national showcase that basically, like, he was getting to that point where all those chickens were supposed to be coming to roost in a good way, where it was like, wait a minute, you met all these kids when they were 12. They're all about to be 18, I feel like, you know? I just don't know. To me, it feels very Randy Shannon-y. It's like, did some great things 10 years ago. It's on the resume on paper. But I don't know. I'd have to, like, sit in the room with the guy and have a conversation with him, because I also think there's a lot of question marks about it.
Oh, that's fair. It's just more, one, I follow him on Twitter, and that person is a sociopath. So I'm actually fully confident that he's probably excited for the job. And also, if we're being, you know, completely transparent and honest here, if you look at the past two coaches he was probably heading recruiting with, both of them aren't super, super duper in love with it. And that's Mack Brown, and that's also Dan Mullen. Like, we all know how much Dan Mullen hated recruiting. So, and then the main reason why he left Texas A&M is because Mack Brown made him the assistant head coach, the tight ends coach, and the recruiting coordinator. That's a huge pay increase. And also, when you're asked about Chris Thompson's salary, Chris Thompson makes $500K. And I'm pretty sure that we have some money left over to basically from the Kenyatta Watson offer to give over to Tim Brewster. Like, this is more that, I get what you're saying, and you're a little more, I guess, it's valid. It's more that I think this is something you have to at least try and attempt, because recruiting right now needs a hell of a shot in the arm.
But I just, like, yeah, it does. Let's give it a shot in the arm. This isn't a shot in the arm. This is smelling salts. Like, this is that thing that used to work 60 years ago. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm hating on Tim Brewster, because I'm sure he did a lot of great things for the program. He coached freaking Nick O'Leary. Like, if he got, like, he got Dalvin Cook here, I respect that. I do.
Let's be fair, though. Nick O'Leary coached himself. That man was a beast. That man was, you, yeah, and I both saw him at recess.
Yeah, he was a beast. But no, it's just like, I think about the guts it takes for a Dan Lanning, like a 35-year-old, to go hire Kenny Dillingham, you know? And it's like, that may not work. And I said on this program, if that doesn't work for Dan Lanning out at Oregon, it's going to look bad that he didn't hire his weakness. He hired someone that's a lot like him. But he's, like, trying to do the energy thing, the young thing. I get this guy's on Twitter, but, like, I just wonder, it just, again, it's another safe pick. Like, I want a guy who's 35 years old, 40. I don't care. Actually, I don't give a shit how old the guy is. He could be 80. Doesn't matter. But I want someone that is at least a risk with some upside. I can bet right now that you, of all people, who knows coaches, you're good at this, you remember their names in a way I just can't, you can probably right now write out exactly what the ceiling for this guy is. And I want us to go get someone where we don't know what the ceiling is, where it's like, this could be the next Jeremy Pruitt, who was coaching at freaking whatever, Hoover High School 3 years before that, and then comes in and transforms our defense and makes us that next step to win a championship. Like, take some chances. Stop with the internal promotions of guys who are just, yeah, they're there, so you'll get them and whatever. Stop keeping people around for continuity, because why not keep a wide receivers coach that can't sign any wide receivers out of high school? Sure, we'll keep doing that. And then I understand all your points. I don't think you're wrong. It's just like, it's just such a safe hire. It's like, okay, great.
I don't think it's safe, though. That's the thing.
Safe. He's coached at every school in Florida. I guess just Florida and Florida State. But yeah. Still, he's coached at Texas A&M. He's coached at UNC. He's coached at Mississippi State. He's at Minnesota. He's coached at Texas. It's like, okay, I get it. He checks all the boxes on his resume. Find someone that, like, is actually going to wow us. It's actually going to connect with the kids, because kids these days are different. I'm starting to hit 30, and I'm starting to realize that these kids that we're signing, like, this class in my firm, like these 22-year-olds, it's getting a little harder to connect with them. I was great at running the internship program when I was 24. Loved running the internship program. I really enjoyed, like, you know, giving these kids their first experience of Capitol Hill and, like, showing them the ropes and, like, it's a lot harder to do that now that I'm 30 and have a kid and, like, have adult things and own a home, you know? And I'm not saying that no one at 61 could be a great recruiter. Nick Saban's an amazing recruiter. Brent Venables is a great recruiter. I just, like, this is just such an unsexy hire for a director of high school relations, other than the fact that he's got 6 Power 5 schools listed on his resume.
I mean, I think it's kind of a risk because what you said earlier, because, like, he did have that sort of, like, elite run where he recruited on Marvin Wilson, recruited a Dalvin Cook and Ermine Lane and Desmond Evans, Malik Henry. Like, he's done it before, and he's done it not only in South Florida, but also in the areas where Mike Norvell is actually better at recruiting, in Georgia, in the Texas area, in the Arizona area. So it actually is helpful with that. I mean, I don't think it's safe because he hasn't been able to kind of prove that since he left. He did it at Texas A&M. He did it with one player at UNC, with Desmond Evans being, I think, the highest kid he signed. That was back in 2020. So I think this is something that, because right now there are no other options out there. I know you want this sexier, yeah, riskier pick, like, but we need something, because right now recruiting is at a drop-dead standstill. And at least some positive momentum, even if it's small, we need to try something. And worst comes to worst, this guy isn't here for after 1 year. Like, because we need to at least attempt something, because I don't know what other options are out there to bring in for this kind of position to roll.
Yeah, I want to keep talking about it. I do, but I'm conscious of the time. I want to tell the folks about betonline.net, but I do want to keep coming back to this because I think there's a few more things we could go on. Folks, if you got a bet online, well, go to betonline.net. I know, crazy, right? BetOnline.net has the most lines, the most props, the most action that you and all your friends or whatever, the most action you could need, the amount of action that you need, all right? Go to, just do it, guys. You know, it's late at night, it's month, it's Tuesdays, you're listening to this, we're doing our best here. BetOnline.net, promo code locked on, welcome bonus, all that stuff. Let's get back to talking about Tim Brewster.
LSU is -3, now dropped, actually, at BetOnline.net. Take Florida State up to +2.
Oh, man. Yeah, I do want to get into the special teams question, by the way. Just real quick, Seth Carpenter, you asked me about our special teams unit. The short version is our kicker, because one of them left, is now our kicker, right? He's going to hit about 75%, and that's if Mike Norvell's not really making him hit any long ones.
And no, he's better at the long ones. Remember that. It's the short ones he's not good at.
Oh boy, even worse.
It's magic.
Yeah. So that is what it is. LSU did lose a great place kicker, but I don't really think that place kickers are going to change this game that much. I was more curious about the field position. So when I looked, Florida State was, I think, in the low 70s last year in starting field position, and we were like 88th in allowed starting position for defenses. So we weren't very good at starting with the ball in a good spot, and we weren't good at keeping them from starting with a good in a good spot. And part of that was because Alex Mastromano averaged, I think, 42.6 yards per punt. That put him around like 49th in the country. He was actually a little bit better than LSU's punter, but not by much. And in both of those metrics, LSU was not that much better than us. However, where they greatly exceeded us was in the advanced stat of expected points added by starting field position. So essentially, how beneficial was your field position to your final score? They were about 16% better than us in that metric. Now, it's a lot of numbers, but I'm a little concerned, and here's why. LSU, of all things, has a punter battle this year. They have a transfer from Notre Dame who averaged, I think, 40, sorry, I don't have my notes in front of me, 43-ish yards last year, played for the Irish for 3 years. He had 50-some-odd punts last year. He is a senior, but they also have a redshirt freshman who, I guess with COVID, means he's like 28, I don't know. 6'5", 240 pounds, and the number one ranked punter in his class 2 years ago. I don't know what it is about this place, but you know, they had Brad Wing. Then they had, who was the guy they had? Drake Vaughn something.
I think they had Tress White, didn't they?
Yeah. But I was saying like 2 years ago, they had a great punter. They had this guy last year, was pretty average. And now there's a chance they have a really, really damn good punter. He was rated a 5-star by the composite, the kicking one that just, they name like one or two. I think they name like 1 5-star punter, 1 5-star kicker. Kickers and punters get their own little rating system.
I was about to say, do we want to put that much stake in that? Because I feel like they're wrong most of the time. I don't mean to denigrate an entire, like, you know, subsection of ranking, you know, recruits, but like punting and kicking, that just sound, I'm not like, that just seems hard, man.
Like, so here, well, that's a good point, and that's actually what I was going to get around to. He was the number one ranked composite punter in his class 2 years ago. They had a guy last year who was averaging, his average put him at like, you know, mid or high 40s, low 50s in the country. And this kid wasn't playing or wasn't starting. So it's kind of like, we always use the thought experiment stuff on here. It's kind of like Occam's razor, right? It's like, okay, so what's the simplest explanation? Is it that they really wanted to preserve this kid's leg for his sophomore year? Or is it that like maybe the ratings aren't always right and maybe he's just not that good? They also took a transfer punter, which tells me, like, I know it was from Brian Kelly's school as he came in, but like that's a little bizarre that you would have the best rated punter in your class, in his class, and you'd bring a transfer with you, right?
Maybe it's more that I do know that they do want these kids to strengthen up their leg, I guess, for an entire, you know, season, so that could be the reason why. And also, this kid from Notre Dame, like you said, averaged around 45 yards a punt, and his longest punt was 72 yards.
Yeah, but that
would, about 55 of that's in the air, which is just utterly, that's a bomb.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at any year, the biggest kicks, like the longest kicks, will always come from that region. It's always going to be someone from Michigan or Notre Dame, mm-hmm. or someone, because they play in the Midwest, and once the wind gets whipping, I would bet that punt happened in November.
What about this, though? He actually pinned opponents inside their own 20 16 times and inside their own 10 5. That's a little more dangerous to think about.
Yeah, that's not good. Now, what is Mastromano's numbers on that? Because I looked at our starting field position. Here's the thing. Mastromano was, again, about 48th, 49th in average punt. But we really, again, mid-70s, like we weren't all that bad in starting field position, which given, or I mean starting field position allowed, which given how much he had to punt from like not great places, I feel like he was pretty good at pinning people last year.
So I don't have the pinning in front. Well, so let's say inside the 20, zero. Inside the 20 yard line, zero. His average punt was 42.7 yards, which is good for 94th in the country.
Yeah.
He punted, though, a lot. You're right, 61 times. His longest was 65 yards. Huh. So, and this is someone that also, he played Australian rules football.
Oh, you know what? You're right. Maybe he was 48th in total punt yards because he punted so damn much. Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, he did punch. Yeah, he's tied for 29th in the country for how many times he punted. But also with Master Mono, he started punting as an 18-year-old, as a 19-year-old Australian rules football, and also he's someone that punts with not only his right leg but also his left leg. And I can probably tell you that he probably actually still kept some people inside the 25, but looking at these metrics right now, that's something that actually isn't tracked. So with Master Mono,
inside of the 20?
That's what I'm looking at right now. He hasn't done that in two seasons, which is kind of strange. Like, you would think he had at least one, right?
Hang on.
Unless ESPN's lying to my damn face.
No, I mean, I believe you. I just, like,
I believe me, too. I just don't know if I believe ESPN.
It's just like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, guess so. Yeah, I don't remember watching one where he did, I suppose. I mean, I don't know.
He's not Lou Headley, the Miami punter. That dude's actually pretty damn good, too.
Either way, the point is, our special teams, it's not looking great, Seth. I wish I could tell you that there was some reason to feel like, oh yeah, like this is definitely going to improve, but there's not really a reason to, other than you're hoping that Alex Mastromano has the standard improvement that people get per year, like Drake said. And Drake, I don't think you're dumb for thinking that. I think we all are hoping that. But unfortunately, there's not a great punter that just transferred. We don't have a new kicker. We don't even have a new punt returner because he broke his leg.
Nope. Micah returns punts. Winston Wright is the one that is the kick returner.
Okay, well, fine. We got a new punt return, so there you go.
And also, I will correct myself from earlier. Thank you, Branson, from 247. He actually did have 7 punts inside the 20.
I was going to say, I feel like, and by the way, just Max said a lot. That's more than one every other game. That's quite a bit.
That actually makes you feel a lot better.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no way it was 0, because I'm pretty sure it was the Miami game where he like had just a beautiful one where he stuck him.
I mean, I think what he needs to do is just literally, I don't understand the run to the side and then kick. I'm like, just, can you just commit to your right leg and just boom it? Because I know for a fact you have the strength to do it.
Well, think about it, right? Like, how long does a punt stay in the air when it's low? Like 4 seconds? So you got a guy like three sometimes, right? So if you can make a runner kind of have to guess which way you're going to roll, that's kind of powerful. It's also harder to catch these rolling end-over-end rugby punts. Because think about, how does a football typically get caught, right? In a spiral. It's how you learn to catch a football. It's how you do. So now the ball's flipping on a different axis. It makes it more challenging to catch.
Just the problem with that is we're often punting from our own 30 or 35. And I'd much rather you please just boom it down there. If we're like at the 50, I kind of get that a little bit more because you're able to control a little bit. But if our offense stagnates and does another 3-and-out like we were accustomed to last year, just hit the crap out of it.
I don't know if he knows how to do that. Like, I feel like I could be wrong on this, but I feel like most Master Mono shanks are when he tries to just like step into it, like when he's not rugby punting. I'd rather take a more now the problem with the rugby punt is your coverage also has to move sideways, right? Because as you're punting it laterally, you're making them collapse on one side. Anyway, we've been on this too long. Last thing I'll say,
probably more than a special teams coach. I'm joking.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say to kind of bring this all to a close about Tim Brewster, because you put a thought in my head when I was like, well, let's do a splash, whatever. So NIL is a thing now, right? And I mean, stuff's always been a thing. But that means like, you know, you got some, you can now know who the people are who know these kids, right? Who have helped set things up in the past. The guys that run the 7-on tournaments, guys that run 7-on teams. You also have some pretty prolific high schools in your state, like St. Thomas Aquinas, right? Or Miami Central, where you've had some success hiring folks from. Why go get a guy that has just, and I know Dan Mullen's sucking's not his fault, but who has now left 3 consecutive jobs within a year, and then pay the guy, I mean, I usually like when you're right. I hope you're wrong. If we pay this guy $300,000 a year, that
was me being hyperbolic. So it'd probably be like $250,000. I think your number is correct.
Like that, we need to pay him like $120,000 until he proves himself. But go get $150,000 and go offer someone who's coaching peewee football, who's middle school age football, that takes these kids to all the 7-on tournaments, that helps organize them, that's passionate, that's hooked up with the right people in South Florida, that knows everyone's name and has known everyone since they were a kid. Like, you know the kind of guys I'm talking about. Like,
I do. I just don't know if
it doesn't work.
I just don't know. Like, one thing we do say is that we want the South Florida Tides to be super strong. If you go and grab someone down there, I think you might limit yourself to only their region. If that's the case, and Tim Brewster already has those connections with the majority of those players down there, and also he has that, he has the connections in Texas. There's a reason why Marvin Wilson came here. So to me, overall, like I understand where you're getting at, but it's also, I think you're going to limit yourself a little bit more if you go after someone like that. But it depends on who you actually go after too.
I think that's a good challenge, and I am going to leave you with one more open-ended thing. You may be right. But to me, he doesn't have connections in those places until we see it. He has resume points in those places. Like, we don't know if anyone in South Florida still takes his phone calls, because when he was at Florida, no one on that staff landed any recruits. Also, I mentioned the seven-ons, and I don't mean that flippantly. That has become, you know, like it was always like this for basketball, where AAU is what really mattered, and high school was just kind of like, you know, kids wanted to win state championships, but AAU is where the scouts went, where the coaches, that's who you wanted to be plugged in with. If you want recruits, you need to be plugged in the AAU scene. That's what seven-ons, which, by the way, are off-season seven-on-seven tournaments. That's what that's become now for football. He's never been successful in this new era with NIL and with seven-ons mattering. So, like, I hope I'm wrong. I hope he comes and everything's great. I'm just saying, like, he's got resume points in South Florida. He's got resume points in Texas, but he also got canned in Texas or chose to leave to go to UF, which kind of makes even less sense UNC. After 1 year. Okay, UNC, and then gets one quarterback, and then he has to go to Florida. It's like, okay, maybe it works. Maybe it works. But I'm just not buying this whole connections thing anymore until I see who they can actually have connections, because we've been burned too many times with this, whether it's analysts on staff that told us, like, that we were told, like, oh, this kid's plugged in at this high school, and then they totally screw you on signing day because they're getting bad information. Or whether it's guys who, you know, like our boy, who are like, oh, yeah, don't worry, I won a national championship here. Everyone wants to come play for me. Oh, wait, never mind. No one wants to come play for Ron Dugan. And we just found that out the hard way twice in a row. So
it's actually kind of ironic that a majority of the people that we have seen struggle with recruiting, aside from Atkins, are actually probably, when it comes to coaching, a lot younger. So maybe when you actually have someone that's been there for a while and is attempting to do that, maybe that actually could probably be sort of like, she probably put you in a step forward in the right direction. Now, do I think he's a cure-all? No, I don't. I think there's a lot more other issues that you need to help out with the staff. But I do think Tim Brewster, that maybe sometimes, people always want to, throw out something old and have something new, right? So maybe, just maybe, let's give the dinosaur a chance.
Well said, my friend. Hey,
that was
guys,
so
we
hard.
Will keep this conversation going. We love talking about Florida State football. We love that y'all are rocking and rolling with us in the off season. But folks, remember, every single day that you hear the outro means that is one day closer to Florida State taking the field. I'm excited. You're excited. Drake and Dave are excited. We all know Holly's excited. Stacy's excited. So let's keep it rolling, folks. We will see you back here every single day, except when the Braves have an exciting series and the Marlins are doing their thing, and maybe we'll miss a Monday here and there, but we will do our best. I'm Max, that was Drake, and this was Locked On Seminoles.
Take care, everybody.